you know, regardless of what flag we carry there, it is kind of very symbolic to the unity, you know, at the whole world scope of everything at all. It, the bar doesn't care. We don't care what flags we all have. We're all there to find out who's the strongest, and it is a brotherhood of open and welcome arms.
Welcome to the Bar Bend Podcast, where we talk to the smartest athletes, coaches, and minds from around the world of strength. I'm your host, David Thomas Tao, and this podcast is presented by barbend.com. Today I'm talking to professional strongman Gabriel Pena, also known online as Texas Titan Gabe. He joins the show to talk about his experiences in the sport, including his 2020 World Strongest Man debut. At that competition, Gabe had to make a tough, health-based call, and we dive into his thought process there. We also discuss why Gabe, a Texas native, decided to represent Mexico at the 2020 World Strongest Man contest. Also, I want to take a second to say we're incredibly thankful that you listen to this podcast. So if you haven't already, be sure to leave a rating and review of the Bar Bend Podcast in your app of choice. We really appreciate it. All right, now let's get to it. Gabe, thanks so much for joining us. I gotta ask you, you definitely ended 2020 on a strong note. You've begun 2021 on a strong note. You've been pulling some massive weight, setting some deadlift PRs. You also set what's probably the heaviest axle bar 18-inch deadlift we've ever seen in the world. What's your training been like these days, and why is it going so well?
Training has been, leading up to the end of this past year, getting that last-minute invite to World's Strongest Man, that really took training to a whole different level of, fire being lit under my ass. It from all that training, we were getting ready. I was getting ready for America's Strongest Man at the time. So I got my invite to World's Strongest Man, and it was a different set of events. But I had been training everything just to be comprehensively strong. And although I wasn't necessarily hitting max deadlifts a lot, I was training lots of deadlifts. And through the course of that training for both America's Strongest Man and World's Strongest Man, my deadlift just blew up. But I definitely feel like I ended the year on a really strong note, to the point where 2021, I'm looking at that world record.
Okay. I was gonna ask, but you're coming out with it.
We're going right into it, man.
You're going right into it. I love it.
I've already gotten that goal written on the board and everything.
So is 502 kilograms, is that the number that you have in mind?
Yeah, at least, unless someone gets that before then.
But well, then you're just gonna have to take it up from there.
Yeah, gonna have to take it up a notch.
It's interesting. That's obviously such an interesting record. I mean, Eddie Hall hit that, the 500, and it was something that going into that, no one thought he would be able to hit. Thor did 501. Look, it looks like a mortal number now. Like a mortal, living, breathing human being can hit numbers like that. But let's talk about the training to do that, because you already have world-class strength. For you, increasing your deadlift by 5% would be an astounding undertaking, right? You know, you don't have any of the beginner gains left. No offense, I don't think.
No, so. You're right. Sometimes a 5 to 10 pound PR can take years at this point. That's why it's got to be so methodical.
Well, what is your methodical approach going to be? Take us through what the training is going to be like over this year.
The big things that sets me apart from a lot of other deadlifters I've watched, and I've watched a lot. I mean, deadlift is my favorite lift, so I like to be very aware of who the other greats are in that sport, in that regard. But I've always been I like to be a jack of all deadlifts. I don't just like doing one deadlift and that's it. I want any type of bar from any type of height for any rep scheme and be able to do it all. And that's something that I've done, not just recently, but always over the years. And I really credit a lot of my strength to that.
You are doing a lot of interesting variations. The axle bar deadlifts that you've been doing, people had a lot of misconceptions on social media as to why you were doing those. And, people thought, well, if you're doing an axle bar deadlift, why are you using straps? Doesn't that defeat the point? But you were responding to people on social media. You're being like, hey, it's a different stimulus. The bar doesn't bend. It's just different when you get to those weights. Small differences are big.
We can get into that, because you asked about my training, and the axle bar has a huge place in it, purely because the fact that the axle doesn't flex like a regular barbell. So when you have any sticking point at any point of your range of motion, do you want to train that height with the barbell, or do you want to get straight to it at the axle and have zero forgiveness from that point? And whenever I do elevated pulls or even deficit pulls, I tend to go for the axle more than the barbell just so I can hit that target zone right away.
I got to ask about the length of a training session for a deadlift, because when you're pulling, you know, 900 pounds or more, and you're using a lot of different types and setups for the deadlift, hey, getting that set up is just like a workout in and of itself, unless you've got professional bar loaders. I like to call that
accessory work.
That's accessory work. Yeah, loading 1,000 pounds of plates on the bar. You know, what kind of volume are you doing for these sessions, and how long is it taking you for a session?
That's a good subject to cover. I mean, when I train deadlift just for the sake of being a supplemental movement in a workout, I can hit that real quick and be done with it, move on to the next exercise. But if deadlift is my main focus for that day, you know, if I'm going in there, I'm going to hit a PR, I'm going to go full pedal to the metal on some, or metal pedal to the metal on something, then I'm going to expect that to take up the bulk of my training session. It's not uncommon for me to go at that point specifically doing just deadlift, and that's it, because it will take 2 to 3 hours just for the setup to put away, and that's it. And at that point, if I had other objectives to hit, either save them for the next day, or that day becomes a 2-a-day training session.
Well, also recovering from the deadlift, I mean, you're talking about maximum nervous system CNS fatigue, right? If you've ever really pulled, for people who have never really pulled heavy before, who have never trained the deadlift, trained to get stronger in it and push their limits, I mean, it can hit you like a ton of bricks. Right, and you'll either sleep like a baby afterwards, or you'll have trouble sleeping because you'll be so fried. You kind of have that like nervous energy from the sessions. Let's talk about frequency of that. What are some of the things you're doing after a true pedal to the metal deadlift session to really start optimizing the recovery process?
Right, and you talk about that shock that the body goes into after. I mean, that's the type of thing where the next day, you know, a 50% bench press is going to feel like a full 100% because you're just so fried. Any time in the recent history where I've done a big PR, where I, you know, hit the 1,000, where I've done that 18-inch axle pull, I can expect for that next 3 to 4 days to still be feeling a little bit of that fatigue in terms of the total central nervous system fatigue along with all the muscles too. So what I look at are some active recovery workouts. And you think of what we use in the deadlift, we use the hips, the back, all the leg muscles. So I want to use those type of exercises. Let's talk about squats. We'll talk about box step-ups, kettlebell swings, just to kind of take the load off a little bit, but get the systems working, nice active blood flow, and then that'll prime me for another heavy session later on in the week. So frequency-wise, if I do the active recovery work in between, right, I can do it once a week.
Gotcha. And I always tell people this, but they don't believe me. Strongman competitors in the open category, giant, the world's strongest men like yourself, you are focusing on the active recovery. You are focusing on the accessory work. A lot of people think, oh, these guys pulling 1,000 pounds, they're not doing kettlebell swings as accessory work. They might be doing heavy kettlebell swings. You might be doing it heavier than the average person in their kitchen, but you're still doing a lot of these things because you can't just pull heavy once a week, squat heavy once a week, and press heavy once a week and continue to make progress at your elite level. The accessory work, I mean, that's really the key. What are some of the other accessory movements you really like focusing on and you'll be focusing on this year?
Let's see. Well, a lot of the big focus with being on deadlift this year, I am going to be looking at all of the intrinsic muscles, the hips, and making sure that they're strong. So things like box step-ups, things like Bulgarian split squats, things like even sled pulls, just working and making sure each side of the hip socket is working in unison. But when we get to the upper body type training too, think about all the upper back work involved. I love any type of row variation. In strongman, the motto is big backs win shows. So if we can get the lats, the traps, all of that upper back musculature nice and strong, then that's good for us. So row variations are great. As for the shoulders and the pressing muscle of the upper body, I really like to emphasize how strong the delts can raise and how strong the triceps can lock out. So any shoulder raises, I love swinging I have a 55-pound sledgehammer that I swing around, and that is really good at getting those shoulders nice and strong and mobile too. But for triceps, a big one, and my clients will all love this too, is the JM triceps press. I love that exercise. It makes some very strong lockout power, and we can all benefit from that in this sport.
I mean, the delayed onset muscle soreness from that movement, if you've never done it before, it's something else. You have trouble getting like pushing up out of bed the next morning, it feels like.
Oh, for sure. Later. Even if you just use the barbell by itself, you feel that thing kicking you the next day.
Okay, I got to say the sledgehammer. I mean, you go by Texas Titan Gabe on social media, so there's something very like mythological about the idea of you swinging around a heavy sledgehammer. Is a 55-pound sledgehammer something you can just get like off the rack at the hardware store? I didn't think they came that heavy.
No. Usually at the hardware store, they don't go past 10 pounds. The 55 sledgehammer, it was made by Slater, and I think the Rogue sells it now too, but it's loadable with whatever you want to fill it with, whether it's gravel, sand, or lead shot. You can get that thing pretty heavy.
So you're the guy to call when I got some yard work out back and I got to drive some rebar or something like that, right?
You're going to need a lot of food and a lot of beer, right?
Yeah, I just got to prime you. Got to prime you up. Yeah. if you could make it calorically positive, if you can get more out of that than you burn. Now we're talking. Let's talk a little bit about the end of the 2020 strongman season for you. You kind of got the last minute call up for World's Strongest Man, which was awesome. Obviously, there were some events surrounding World's Strongest Man and the season that were very unfortunate. The untimely passing of Aaron Page, which was incredibly sad and in a way a sad hallmark moment for the strongman community to come together around that loss. But it was your World's Strongest Man debut. Take us through that process and take us through your experience there, because you came out of the gate really fast. I think ran into a little bit of a speed bump, but gave folks a glimpse as to what they can expect from, you know, the competitors are going to see in future iterations of that event.
Yeah, well, I mean, World's Strongest Man, that is, from any one of us who gets started in this path on the sport, that's the pinnacle of the sport. You know, you have the 25 strongest men in the world on that given year competing. So when you get there, we can do any of these local competitions where we've got athletes that we've seen before, we know what they're capable of, we know how we stack up. When you have guys from all over the world, you don't have that immediate confidence right away. And it's like, I'm surrounded by the greats, but it's not over till it's over. We got to really push and see where we stack up. But having been there, I really felt like a professional athlete, if that makes sense. We were treated very well by the competition hosts, the companies putting it on, IMG, World's Strongest Man, SBD. Chauffeurs from the airport to the hotel, room service, like all this stuff, everything we could ever need. So that was really, really cool. But as I said, without that the confidence, you know, with knowing how you'll stack up against the best of the best, you approach every event and it's a lot of the mental fortitude type training, like tuning out all of the bad noise, getting yourself honed in on the objective at hand, and then getting ready to execute. And an elite level competitor, if they're not doing the right shows, they don't get to tap into that zone. And I think it's absolutely essential to get there, to truly push yourself to that upper echelon of, you know, being the world's strongest man at some point. The whole experience was just wild, though. It was absolutely wild. And even with the extent, the circumstances surrounding it, like, you know, you touched on some of them, but just being in the year of 2020, we were there during a hurricane. The competition got pushed back a few days too while we were there. World's Strongest Man, unlike any other competition I've done, there is a huge aspect of TV production to it. So you're not just going there and competing. You're waiting for the production crew to tell you when it's time to compete. You're waiting for interviews to be over. You know, Eddie and Martins have to finish talking, and who knows how long that's going to take. But it's an incredible experience, and you have to be very adaptable to perform there because of the constant, wait and be ready. We're going to delay. We're going to go. That whole stop and start nature of it. But
it's like being a movie star on set, except you have to do something extraordinarily physically taxing.
Yeah, like being a movie star and the stuntman at the same time.
that's the better analogy. I should have led with that. Yeah, it's a better analogy. Let's talk about your experience, because it was awesome watching you as a young rookie make their debut there. And then unfortunately you did have to withdraw due to a medical issue. We're talking now, training's going well. Spoiler alert, everyone, Gabe seems to be doing pretty well, so we're all very happy about that. But walk us through that, if you don't mind sharing.
No. I definitely would love to share it, because I feel like the call that I had to make was a tough one that a lot of people could benefit from hearing. Getting into World's Strongest Man, I got the invite less than a month prior. I was preparing for another show. Then I suddenly get called to the biggest show in the world. And a lot of my focus went to making sure I was strong enough and drilled enough at the events we were going to be tested on to do well. And because I didn't see myself anywhere but in the finals. And my cardio took a back seat unfortunately, in my training. You know, I wasn't doing the frequent 2,000 meter rows. I wasn't doing any of the frequent conditioning I do to keep my ticker moving smoothly, but I was building a lot of mass and a lot of strength. So I get to World's Strongest Man, the heaviest I've ever been, 330 pounds, and I feel like an absolute tank, but I know my cardio isn't too great. First event, Farmer's Walk, grip has always been an issue for me because I've had lots of little ligament injuries in my fingers over the years. And I still did pretty well for how big and awkward those handles were, but I finished towards the bottom of the pack. And then deadlift came about, the second event of the competition. It was a max reps, 760-pound big circus bar, and deadlift is my event, so I put on a hell of a show there. But pedal to the metal, I gave it as much as I absolutely could. Got eight, almost nine reps with that barbell in a minute time. And then after the event was done, I felt like I was catching my breath for a long time. Much longer than felt normal, you know. 5 minutes passes after an event like that, you've pretty much caught your breath or you're feeling good to where you can talk and walk around. But I still felt like I was fighting for calming down my heart rate. And even later on, when we had gotten back to the hotel after being at the convention center competing, I was sitting at dinner with the guys. And I'm like, I don't feel like I'm calmed down yet. My heart is still pounding. What anyone else would do, think, oh, a good night's sleep will do the trick. I wake up the next morning and it's still there. I get to the convention center and I'm concerned because I feel very tired. My heart's beating out of control. I'm checking my own pulse and it seems like I'm skipping beats. So at this level of athleticism, at this level of competition, I would feel like I was not doing my due diligence as an athlete, if I did not make someone aware. I mean, they had a full medical staff there. If I told someone, maybe they could give me something, maybe they could just, you know, do something that could help, or at least they would be aware of what was going on in case something else happened. But when I went to go get evaluated by the doctors on staff and the medical team, they listened to my heart. They gave me an electrocardiogram while I was there and they saw the readout and I was in atrial fibrillation. My heart was skipping beats. There was a electrical miscommunication from the top valves to the bottom valves. And although it's not a life-threatening situation in itself, with the nature of what we're doing, especially on that day, we had a big loaded carry medley. We had stones, we had log. At any time, if I put a demand on my heart that was too great for it to match, the lights are going to go out, whether or not I have an object overhead or not. So that was, I was told by the medical staff, like, you can't compete today. We can't advise you that it's a good idea to compete today. So I had to pull out. And that was the toughest call I've ever had to make, having such high ambitions and knowing that I belonged there at World's Strongest Man. My first year ever there. My pro debut. It was my first pro show, too. And I had to pull out after two events. But when it comes to issues of the heart, especially in this sport, there have been so many names over the years that had their careers cut short because of a heart problem. And you have to listen to that. You have to listen to what the doctors are telling you. You have to listen to your body. And as tough as that call was to make, it's not about that one competition and whether or not I placed, whether or not I did well, whatever. It's about all the competitions yet to come. I don't want to just do one World's Strongest Man. I want to do many, you know? So that's the call that I have to make for the future. And if there's a weak link in the engine of the body, the heart, then we need to go back to the drawing board and fix that, make sure it never comes back again. And that's exactly what I've done since. And I feel like I'm in a really good spot. And both myself and my doctor and my health team behind me don't think it's anything more than a freak issue brought upon by a very hasty prep.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. And I think I speak for pretty much all fans in the strongman community when I say that we're very glad that you listened to your body, which is, I can't imagine, you know, what you were going through at the time, not only physically, but having to deal with the mental weight of making that decision, making people aware during your pro debut, which is kind of crazy to say. That might be the first time in recent memory anyone's made their pro debut at World's Strongest Man since pro has been a thing. You do bring up something that I do want to touch on, which is the fact that, you know, your cardio had kind of gone by the wayside in prep for World's Strongest Man. And you talk about your frequent 2,000 meter rows and prioritizing cardio. I think that's an aspect of strongman that people underestimate, which is not only the fact that you have to go lift big weights and you're in the gym doing event-specific training. But the conditioning aspect of the sport, I think, is really undervalued when it comes to public perception. Can you talk a little bit about, pardon me, what your conditioning work is, you know, generally, and kind of what you started to focus back in on since World's Strongest Man 2020?
Right. Now, as far as my conditioning goes, a lot of it, of course, is sport specific in terms of making sure that I can do well while I'm competing. And in strongman, our events rarely will ever last over a minute, and definitely will not last over 2 minutes. So it is that very short, explosive type of cardio output. But at the same time, a lot of my hobbies involve, you know, one of my biggest hobbies is traveling up to the high country and, you know, hiking up big peaks. And you need a certain level of functionality to do that too. So a lot of the things that I do also are just being a good and functionally fit human. But my favorite forms of cardio will be, I love the rowing machine. I absolutely love it because it's a full body motion. And if I'm trying to recover from one training session to the next, I get total blood supply circulated throughout the body, not just on only the legs if I was doing, you know, bike, but I get the arms, the elbow flexors, the upper back, everything comes into play there. But I love doing 400 meter sprints on timed intervals on the rower. You know,
You love that? You might be the only person who loves that in the world, by the way.
You know, I might not love it in the moment, but I love how I feel after, and the accomplishment and satisfaction I feel after is great. But, you know, 400 meter row, whatever time it took, take that time off and then do it again. Repeat it 3 or 4 times. I'll grab the sledgehammer, go wail on the tires and outside the gym for a little bit, get some shoulder mobility in with that. And then if I'm feeling really, really slow on my feet or like I need to improve there, then I'll do some sprints or actual jogging. However, being a super heavyweight athlete, you know, above 300 pounds, I try to minimize the frequency of the times I actually do jog. You know, impact on the knees is a very real thing on anyone who weighs over 200, but especially over 300 pounds. So I try to keep that not too frequent.
I liken strongman athletes to crocodiles, right? They're not gonna outrun you over a marathon, but over 50 yards,
oh yeah,
you're bait at that point.
Oh yeah, man. I am very quick on a short distance.
Yeah, one thing I want to talk about too, and it's interesting because when we posted on Instagram of all places, I think it was even before he had an article on it, that you'd received a call up to World's Strongest Man. We kind of had the roster so far. And it was interesting because the World's Strongest Man roster was finalized so late. There was a lot of movement, and there was a lot that was unclear. And you were representing Mexico at this competition, and we obviously had that on the article and on the graphic I think we made. And we just got immediately swarmed with comments saying, "Well, Gabe's from Texas. You have like the flags wrong. Everything's wrong. We can't believe anything you all say." You actually came in on the comments on social, and you're like, "Guys, this is correct. Like it's okay." tell us about the decision behind representing Mexico and how your heritage kind of came into play there. I'm a little curious.
Right. Well, my dad's side of the family, my last name is Peña. My dad's side of the family is of Mexican descent. His grandparents had immigrated, were the last country of Mexican, or the last generation, excuse me, of Mexican natives who immigrated over to Texas at the turn of the century, and around the year 1900. And all historically throughout strongman, especially at World's Strongest Man, there hasn't been any Mexican athletes or any Hispanic Latino athletes ever there. And I've lived in Texas my whole life. I've lived in South Texas right along the border. I could ride my bike to Mexico if I wanted to. And I know there's strong people here. A lot of my friends, my family are all Hispanic, Mexican descent. And I take a lot of pride in that. My dad took a lot of pride in that too. And unfortunately, in March of this past year, I lost my dad to ALS. It was a very aggressive onset of Lou Gehrig's disease. And I always remember Dad taking so much pride in his Latino heritage. When we were in elementary school and we were taking standardized tests, he would be like, "Don't put white, put Mexican or Hispanic, and take pride in your last name." And that always stuck with me too. And of course, I have a whole other side of the family, but I've lived in an area of the country, in an area of the state that is very Mexican dominant. And there's a lot of love here, a lot of pride here. And I wanted to tip my hat towards my ancestry and represent my Latino heritage at the world stage, especially when there hadn't been any previously before.
What was the reception like in the community in South Texas when people found out you were going to be competing on the stage, and now that it's actually aired on television and results are out, what has been the reception you've received?
Total pride from everyone here in South Texas. There was an incredible outreach of Mexican athletes, of Spanish athletes, and just Latino athletes all over who were just so fired up to see a Spanish last name and the Mexican flag at World's Strongest Man. And you touched on it, how there is a lot of confusion with, oh, Gabe's from Texas, he's an American citizen, why is he representing Mexico? Seemingly all the ones who kind of had a problem, but who were confused and not necessarily like, oh, Gabe's representing Mexico, let's give him a hug, were the white people. But it was such, the messages I received, especially through Instagram, of Latino athletes, it was truly heartwarming, and I felt like I was part of a very large family. That's the best way to put it.
You got to be careful. You might inspire the generation of competitors who are going to give you a run for your money as the pride of South Texas. You got to be careful.
I hope so. I mean, I always tell my clients and my athletes, I'm going to train you to beat me, but you're going to have to be the one to do it. we're all in this sport. We're all about who's truly the strongest and how we can find out who that person is. So the more competitors we have, the more exposure the sports gets, especially for Latino athletes. The more Latino athletes we can get there too. I mean, I know there's some strength here. I know there's some strength here and in Mexico, and I want to see those athletes represented at the world stage.
There is. I feel like you might be opening, I don't want to say Pandora's box because that's a bad thing. What's the good version of Pandora's box? A cookie jar? I don't know. Of, you know, if we see an influx of more diversity, more flags at these high profile strength events, I think that's great, because strength is amazing in that it's so uniting. Right, it doesn't. The weight on the bar doesn't care where you were born. The bar couldn't give two craps what your last name is or what language you speak. It really doesn't care. Right, it's who put in the work, who's strong, and who's putting themselves out there in that. So that's one thing I love. That's a big reason I love strength sports. I'm so passionate about it. But not to go too far down that rabbit hole.
No, but that is a good thing to touch on. You know, we have everyone coming from so many different backgrounds, and you know, regardless of what flag we carry there, it is kind of very symbolic to the unity, you know, at the whole world scope of everything at all. The bar doesn't care. We don't care what flags we all have. We're all there to find out who's the strongest. And it is a brotherhood of open and welcome arms. And I love it. I've loved that from that aspect from day one.
Who are some of the competitors who, you know, especially at the World's Strongest Man level, because our listeners might just be more familiar with that than, say, you know, the national circuit. Who are some of the competitors who really stuck out to you as like really just like fun to compete with? People you just really enjoyed being around and getting to throw down with?
Well, my boy Trey Mitchell here from Texas, he and I both started Strongman around the same time. He competed a little earlier than I did, but when we were amateurs, we both were always competing with each other in competitions. He would win one, I would win one, he'd win one, I would win one. And it had been that way. And so getting to compete with him at World's Strongest Man, that was just fun in itself because of our history together. But aside from the American athletes, you know, these guys who I've been privileged to see all throughout the years because we're in the same country, one of the athletes that really stood out to me from the international scope was Luke Richardson. I wasn't really too familiar with who he was. I knew he had pulled some very impressive and fast heavy deadlifts, but this guy is very young and he's so well-rounded in all aspects of the events that we were tested on. He was a fun person to share that stage with and even to talk to at a lot of the dinners we had. But then all of the big legends, you know, the guys who had been there a long time, getting to compete in the same show as Brian Shaw or getting to meet the Stoltmans too. All of it was just getting to deadlift right back and forth with Jerry Pritchett. Like those, Mr. 1000 himself, man, it was so much fun. It was so much fun being with these guys, and it was much more fun having the scope of the athletes I compete against extended to that of the world versus just the USA.
Awesome. Well, Gabe, where's the best place for people to keep up to date with your training, your competition, anything else that people might want to get from you?
I'm most active on Instagram. My Instagram handle is Texas Titan Gabe. I am also on Facebook, and I do have a YouTube, Gabriel Pena on YouTube. I'm aiming to get a lot more content on that coming in the next few months, so be on the lookout there. But if you want the most in-depth and up-to-date focus on my training is on Instagram, so check it out at Texas Titan Gabe.
The Texas Titan Gabe, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you sharing your story and experiences from last year, and I think we're all really excited to see what 2021 has in store. A lot of big things on the horizon for you.
Thanks. I'm excited too. It's going to be a wild ride.